Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for listening to this latest episode of the Corner Office Podcast. A little cross-promotion first, though, to get us going here. We're kicking off a year-long series on Marketplace this month, 10 years after it started, how the financial crisis changed our lives and this economy forever. We're calling it The Divided Decade. Check it out. It'll be online, on demand, and on the air. I mention it because it makes my conversation with this next guest especially relevant. Tim Mayopoulos is the CEO of Fannie Mae, the Federal National Mortgage Association, founded during the Great Depression, then and now in the business of helping companies that make mortgage loans make more of those loans. You might remember Fannie Mae and its cousin Freddie Mac both got into trouble during the crisis and both wound up being taken into government conservatorship in September of 2008. Well, Tim Mayopoulos started working at Fannie Mae not long afterwards, spring of 2009, following a career on Wall Street. And when we sat down, I asked him whether he remembered the moment when he realized in the depths of that crisis, things were eventually going to be okay.
When I got here in the first quarter of 2009, I wasn't sure things were actually going to be okay, to tell you the truth. I had worked in four other financial institutions and was very much on the front lines of what was going on in terms of the crisis in 2008 while I was at Bank of America. So I was there when the bank, did the deal with Merrill Lynch and did the deal with Countrywide, and we looked at things like Lehman Brothers, and it was a very, very scary time. I think for people who actually were deep in financial services, we really weren't sure whether the country wasn't going to end up in a Great Depression. It could have turned out much, much, much worse than it did. And so I think in a sense today, knowing that it is okay, although a lot of people have suffered a lot, it was far from inevitable.
Here's the rest of that conversation. Tim Mayopoulos, welcome to the program.
Great. It's great to be here.
For those who aren't entirely familiar with what this place does, give me the 30-second, this is what we do.
Okay, so here at Fannie Mae, we're in the mortgage business, but we don't make mortgages to consumers, to borrowers. What we do is we buy mortgages from folks who originate mortgages, whether it's a credit union or a bank or an independent mortgage bank. And so they make loans to those to borrowers. And then we buy those loans from them, which gives them more money to go out and make more loans. And we take the mortgages that we buy and we put them into mortgage-backed securities, and we guarantee the purchasers of those securities that we'll cover all the principal and interest payments in the event that the borrower doesn't make them. So what does all that do? What that does is it enables us to attract global capital to the U.S. housing markets at very efficient rates. So this is a huge market. I mean, we do this at really big scale. So the U.S. mortgage market is a $10 or $11 trillion market. So it's much bigger than most people even imagine. And so being able to attract that global capital to the U.S. housing market is really important.
Is it fair to say you all make the American housing industry work?
We are really a fundamental backbone of the U.S. housing industry. We, if you think about it, we finance roughly 30% of all the mortgages in the United States. So we do it, as I say, at really big scale. We have a $3 trillion balance sheet. So if you drive down the typical street of a regular mm-hmm. neighborhood in the United States and you look at the houses on it, roughly one in three of them is going to be financed with a Fannie Mae mortgage.
Can't talk to the guy running Fannie Mae without saying the following phrase: financial crisis. You're nodding seriously.
Financial crisis was a profound effect on the country, but also a profound effect on us. I came to Fannie Mae in the wake of the financial crisis. I wasn't here before the crisis hit. I'd been in financial services a long time, but decided to come to Fannie Mae precisely because of the financial crisis and that housing was really at the center of the crisis. And my view was that I wanted to take my modest talents, whatever they were, and bring them to an institution that was really important to housing. There are a lot of people who would say that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were really at the cause of the financial crisis. I don't agree with that. I've been in financial services a long time. There are many contributing causes to the crisis, but clearly being able to sustain the housing finance system through the crisis was absolutely critical to the recovery.
Which is part of how we got to, and I don't want to go back too far into the crisis because there's lots to talk about what you're doing now, but that's how we got to September the 5th of 2008, where the government says,
listen, you're ours basically, and you enter into conservatorship. After having been known as government-sponsored entities, right, and backed up by the full faith and credit of the government, I guess the question is, should the American government be in the business of guaranteeing mortgages?
It's a fair question that people ought to ask. We don't have to have a housing finance system where the government implicitly or explicitly backs a big part of the market. We don't have to have that. Other countries, you know, all finance their housing systems in different ways. No other country has exactly a system like ours, but our system also has certain benefits that other systems don't. You know, one of the benefits of the government historically implicitly backing the mortgage market was that it gave access to credit to a lot of people, and it made possible certain kinds of products that are not available anywhere else. For example, the 30-year fixed rate mortgage. Right. Most people in America would think that that's the way the rest of the world operates, that you can go anywhere and get a long-term fixed rate mortgage. It doesn't really exist anywhere else. And it's an important invention, because what people don't remember is that Fannie Mae came out of the Great Depression,
right?
It was created by FDR to really deal with a serious problem, which was that there were plenty of people during the Depression who made their mortgage payments for a period of time, but nonetheless lost their homes. And why did that happen? It happened because the way people financed homes in those days is they got a 3 or 5 year bullet loan. So the loan didn't amortize over that time, didn't pay off over that time. Right. They just financed it for 3 to 5 years. And then they had to roll it over with a new loan from a new institution. People may have made their payments for 3 or 5 years. And at the end of those 3 or 5 years, they couldn't find another institution to give them a new mortgage.
Right.
So they lost their house to foreclosure. FDR recognized that, and the government decided, we're going to make sure that we have liquid markets, that we're going to have credit available in all markets at all times, all across our country, and that people will be able to finance that with a very long-term instrument.
Okay, but the Depression was a very long time ago. The American financial system is much more sophisticated now, much more liquid now. Do you doubt that private investment would come were you to be dissolved, as some lawmakers and many policymakers say, listen, let's get rid of these two?
Look, I have no doubt that private capital ought to play the primary role of backing the housing finance
system. Say that again. Here's a guy who runs Fannie Mae saying private capital ought to be doing it.
Private capital ought to be the primary source of funding for the housing markets in the United States. And in fact, the innovations that we've been a big part of since conservatorship was imposed 9 years ago have contributed to that. So if you think historically, Fannie Mae has this enormous balance sheet. We're making all these loans. We have 18 million mortgage loans on our balance sheet. Oof. Historically, we would have held all of that credit risk for the life of those assets. Today, we don't do that. We now transfer a very significant part of that credit risk to private capital. In other words, we're essentially getting reinsurance on what we have. We either do this through capital markets transactions or reinsurance transactions. So private capital has been drawn to this market in ways over the last 3 or 4 years that never previously existed. So people have the impression that Fannie and Freddie are continuing to take all this risk. We still take some risk, but we are transferring a very, very big part of that risk to private capital.
When you go to Capitol Hill or have meetings with lawmakers or whoever it is downtown, do you hear people calling for the wind down of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac anymore?
Sure, that happens. And look, I think it's good to have these robust debates, because whatever system we settle on, people should understand what the pros and cons of it are. There is no panacea. There's no perfect system. Every system comes with positive aspects and negative aspects, things that are good characteristics and things that are risks. And it's just important for people to understand what those risks are. My own view is that private capital should take all of the first loss exposure in the system. But you ultimately need a catastrophic backup, okay? And the only party in the world that's big enough to do that is the United States government. But there should be enough private capital to take those losses in front of that taxpayer exposure.
What do your friends, you were on Wall Street for a long time, so what do your friends at Bank of America or JP Morgan or wherever, what do they say when you guys go to whatever meetings you go to and this comes up and you say, you know what, you guys ought to be doing this. You ought to be on the hook.
You know, I think there is private capital out there that will take that risk if properly compensated for it. At least it will do that in most markets at most times.
Yeah.
One of the things people need to understand is that the capital markets work until they don't work. There are moments when they just seize up. And that's why an institution like Fannie Mae exists, so that when your local bank won't make you a mortgage loan, that we're out there to say, no, we'll actually continue to provide liquidity to this market.
So you got here in 2009, just past the worst of the crisis. It was still plenty bad, but just past the worst. Had we not had that crisis, what do you think this economy would look like today?
It's very hard to say. You know, in part, one of the reasons I say that is that so much of the perceived growth of the economy through the 2000s, you know, was in effect built on unsustainable activities, right? So a lot of people spent a lot of money in that economy based on what they thought their house was worth or what other investments they had were worth, and it turns out they really weren't worth that. So it's very hard to know, if you unwound the crisis, how much true economic activity would have been there. So I think it's an almost impossible question to answer, because I don't think you can actually put all the pieces back to where they would have been and say what would have happened. It's very difficult to know. I do think that one of the things we need to be careful about here is that the country is not experiencing the kind of growth that we've historically seen. GDP is growing at a lower rate than what we've seen in the past. And there are lots of factors involved with that, including the effects of globalization and automation. But we do need to figure out how to create good quality, sustainable jobs for people. And I think that, frankly, the housing sector has produced a lot of that in the past. It's not really doing that in this recovery in the same way. Home starts are still nowhere close to what they've been historically. But when you build a house, it's pretty hard to offshore a house building, right? It's pretty hard to send that to India or to China. And so I think that's been actually one of the things that's been a little challenging.
Does the existence of conservatorship and the financial crisis still color what happens in this agency?
Look, I think we work very hard to run this place in combining two different kinds of thought. One is that we have a very important public service purpose, which is to make sure that we can provide liquidity to the U.S. mortgage markets and try to achieve as much affordable housing, whether it's home ownership or rental, as possible. That's one important public purpose. But we also try to bring private sector commercial sensibilities to that, private sector risk management capabilities. So we're very focused on fulfilling our public purpose, but doing that with really first-rate, world-class private sector capabilities.
Talk to me for a second, actually, about the idea of affordable housing, which there is clearly not enough of in most major cities in this country. What's your role and how capable are you in that regard?
So there really is an affordable housing crisis in the country, and you mentioned it being in cities, and that's true. But there's also a great affordable housing crisis in rural areas as well. The real supply of affordable housing in the country is really lagging. There is an enormous portion of the population that is what we would call cost constrained. That these are people who pay more than 30% of all their income just to get housing. And so the supply of affordable housing has actually been declining as population has been growing. And this is really a critical problem. And we don't really have, frankly, a national housing strategy on how we're going to deal with that.
So what are you doing? Are you able to, soak up construction loans or something like that?
So we don't build housing. We finance housing. So obviously one of the things we've been doing is on the home ownership side is trying to make sure that we provide as much access to credit for qualified borrowers who can actually sustain a mortgage payment. There's no point in putting people into homes that can't afford, but we have worked very hard to make sure that we can grant credit to people who really are capable and not try to draw the box too tight. And then on the rental side of the house, we finance an enormous amount of what I would call workforce housing. About 90% of what we finance is affordable at up to 120% of what's called area median income. That is 120% of what the average wage is in a typical community. So that's that's housing for people like firefighters and police officers and teachers and nurses. That's really important. So that's the bulk of what we do on the rental side, but we also try to do what we can on the home ownership side.
Give me your sense of the basically the state of the American housing industry. I mean, are we stable? Are we better off than we were 9 years ago?
We're clearly better off than we were 9 years ago. I mean, the country was really in a great crisis, and we certainly at Fannie Mae understand that the reason the government invested a lot of money in Fannie Mae was not because it particularly wanted to do that. That wasn't an investment decision the taxpayers made and said, we really want to be invested in Fannie Mae. But they understood the critical importance of this institution to the operation of the housing finance system.
We ought to say here, the government taxpayers have been paid back.
The taxpayers have received a lot of dividends. Yeah. So the government put $116 billion into Fannie Mae. The taxpayers have gotten, you know, almost $50 billion more in dividends than they put in, okay? So we still, as a legal matter, have an outstanding obligation to the government. But if you think about the dollars in and the dollars out, the taxpayers are in a much better shape than anyone ever thought that they would be. So that's been a real positive.
Do you ever go to your regulators and say, listen, can we lose this conservatorship thing?
You know,
Or is that just a non-starter?
No. Look, I'd say our regulator has been on record clearly and consistently saying that conservatorship is not a sustainable state. This is not a permanent state. It shouldn't be a permanent state. And that ultimately you need to bring private capital back to this market in bigger scale, and that you need to be able to release these institutions or create some other institutions to operate the system without this kind of government oversight.
I want to make sure I understand. It sounds like you're amenable to, if not Fannie Mae going away entirely, but then certainly pulling back from where you are in this mortgage business.
We're certainly open to that. We're not wedded to an old system. We're actually committed to, and most of us who have been here through the crisis are committed to creating a housing finance system that works, right? And we've devoted ourselves to making improvements to that housing finance system. We've changed a lot around here. We imposed much better underwriting standards. We made significant changes to our business model in terms of, we used to run this enormous investment fund inside the company that produced most of the profits. We have wound that down. We've changed our business model by laying off risk in ways that we never did before. It's certainly at very large scale in ways we never did before. And now we're bringing huge innovation to the housing finance system that really has operated the way it has for decades. The people who are here, we're committed to making a better housing finance system. I'm probably one of the very few CEOs who stood up in front of his entire company and said, you know what? We have to recognize the fact that the legal entity that we work for, Fannie Mae, may cease to exist at some point. Hmm. Not many CEOs stand up and say that, okay? But I've stood up more than once and said, but that's not what your focus should be. Your focus should be on being here and being part of creating a housing finance system that will support the needs of this country for the next 20 or 30 years. A lot of people are focused on what happened 10 years ago.
Right.
What we really need to be focused on as a country is, what do we want the housing finance system 10 years from now or 20 years from now to look like?
So let's talk about that for a second, because here we are 10 years past the crisis. Hopefully put it in the rearview mirror, but it did bring a lot of changes. What's the next crisis looking like?
The next crisis, in my view, is not going to be in housing finance in terms of, you know, a calamity that could affect the economy. But there are serious challenges in housing finance. And I would say the single biggest challenge at the moment is really around something you put your finger on earlier, which is affordable housing. We're not creating enough affordable housing in this country for people to own or to rent and create communities that their families can live in, where they can get good educations and they can live, you know, solid lives. That's a critical need, and that's something that's the next housing crisis.
So this is going to be a somewhat heretical question, but should everybody in this country own a home?
No. I don't think everyone in this country wants to own a home. There are lots of people who aspire to own homes who can own homes, and there are people who aspire to own homes who may not actually be able to own homes. And one of the things we've been very thoughtful, I think, about at Fannie Mae is that we see no value in putting people into homes who can't sustainably afford them. a lot of damage was done to a lot of families and a lot of communities by actors putting folks into mortgages 10 or 15 years ago who really had no business being in them, okay? So we want to make sure that we have sustainable home ownership if we're going to create home ownership. Now, there are always going to be people who get a mortgage who end up defaulting for some reason or another. They may die. They may lose their job. They may get divorced. They may get sick. So you know there's always in any large population a certain number of people who won't be able to sustain their particular home. But we want to know that as the vast majority of people that we extend credit to are actually going to be able to sustain that home mortgage. So no, we don't believe that everybody should own their own home. But by the same token, I think we recognize that for most American families, the only way that they can actually create any even modest amount of wealth is by owning their own home. I think about my own family. Mm-hmm. I mean, my father was a blue-collar worker, a UAW member. My brother's a truck driver for Walmart. My other brother is an auto mechanic, and my sister's a paralegal, okay? So I know where I come from, and I know, you know, the people who live in these, regular communities. The only way they're going to create money that they can retire on, my entire parents' retirement savings came from the equity in the house that they bought when they were in their 20s. That's true for most Americans. That's an idea that's become quite suspect, I think, for many people in the wake of the crisis. But if we go back and we look, the fact is people need a place to live, and most people are not going to take the money they would have put into a mortgage and put it into a mutual fund every month and see that grow over 40 or 50 years. Most people don't have that luxury of being able to take money they would otherwise spend on housing and put it in investments and save for their retirement. They actually need to be able to do both. And so for many people, owning a home, I think, is the only way they're going to create any wealth. Now, to your point, not everybody should own a home. Not everybody can own a home. And that's why we also, as a country, need to be very focused on creating enough affordable rental housing, which is one of the reasons why we're very focused on that workforce space.
Tim, thanks a lot.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
That was Tim Mayopoulos, the CEO of Fannie Mae. Thanks for listening. And while I've got you, please do consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. Those do actually help, and we appreciate the ones you've left for us already. Just, you know, be kind. Also, coming soon to the content device of your choosing, our year-long series on the lasting impact of the financial crisis on us and our economy. We're calling it, once again, The Divided Decade. This episode was produced by Bridget Bodner. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rosdahl. Thanks for listening. Another episode coming to you in a couple of weeks.